Jeff Epps is the greatest player that's ever played in Florida.
This Nugget's pink, and I hate it.
About to go hard for 50 minutes.
You can't say stuff like this on podcasts, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, November 13th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry. Joining me today, two football writers with a ton of explosives. We got Phil Kegler.
Going hard every day.
And Kyle Maestri.
I'm so dangerous with all my explosives.
We got a lot to talk about on today's show. Obviously, we're going to talk about Steve Addazio and the Florida Gators offense. First off, we're also going to preview the South Carolina game this weekend, talk a little bit of Florida basketball, and then round up the show with our always courageous Gator guarantees. I want to get right into the Addazio stuff. Kyle, you were there Tuesday when offensive coordinator Steve Addazio met with the media. Just break it down what happened real quick.
All right. We're going to call this segment Analyzing Addazio.
That's clever. Yeah. Alliteration. I like
right
it.
Right there on the fly. Boom. Bam, bam, bam. That's what that was. So what we're going to do is offensive coordinator Steve Addazio came out to speak, and he did more speaking than answering questions, I would say. Just kind of let it rip up there. So the first thing, he gave some audio at the beginning that we didn't get a hold of for whatever reason, but it's not important. Something about a pickle boat. But the first thing was our own, Bobby Colovi asked him a question. This is almost word for word it was, but not quite word for word. It was, you know, after the Georgia game, you guys looked like maybe your guys' offense looked reminiscent of 2008. Did you think you were over some of this inconsistencies that you were facing? Implying, like, they kind of reverted to that against Vanderbilt, which they only scored 27 points against Vanderbilt, so that's probably a true statement.
Yeah. Mike,
and
defense.
Off of that question, he spoke for four straight minutes. So we're gonna give you the best of that four straight minutes and the remaining audio, which is another, like, 2 minutes or so. So we're just going to play a clip. And then we'll talk about it afterwards, set up the next clip, and we'll keep doing that for a couple clips here. So the first clip you got is right after Bob asked that question. He went for a little bit, and here's what he said.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. There are some things, though, we like to clean up, right? I mean, we're saying we want to clean a red zone production. How do we do that? Well, turnovers cause that. But to say this team is last year's team, or last year's team was the 06, it's hard to do that. You get different cats. It's a different deal. So I think sometimes I hear that a lot, and it's like, you got to accentuate who your guys are. We're a really good rushing team. Why? Why? We're really good backs. We're your explosive guys right now. You know? Well, Fernandez has got a tremendous amount of explosives right now. He's an explosive guy. Cooper's got a tremendous amount of explosives. Jeff Depp's got a tremendous. Those are your guys. When your backs become those guys, they take on a different life. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay, so he's making the point. Obviously, he doesn't like being compared to 2008 because 2008 was good and this offense is not. So he starts off by kind of like, okay, let's get away from 2008. Then at the end of the clip, you hear him go into the explosives. He sounds, ridiculous for saying Jeff Demps has a lot of explosives. What he's talking about there is he's counting 20 yards or more, plays of 20 yards or more, as an explosive play. So when he says he has a lot of explosives, he sounds stupid, but like he's referring to the amount of explosive plays that he has.
Yeah.
But the real crime there is at the end, you hear him say, like, oh, you got to go with your guys. Who are your guys? And he says, Hernandez, Cooper, and Demps have a tremendous amount of explosives. And then he says, when your backs are those guys, you got to adjust and get the backs the balls or something like that. But only one of the three guys that he mentioned is a running back. So that's what just happened in that clip.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely outrageous. And I'd like to point out that Riley Cooper, one of the explosive guys, had a massive one catch for 7 yards against the mighty Vanderbilt defense. So he was real explosive there. But, I mean, it's just really outrageous. Like, they're just not clicking. They're just not good. Like, you can frame it any way you want. You can, like, milk some scats. We were bringing this up because Steve Addazio, I don't know if we're going to play that clip, but he said that they had about the same number of
we'll get to that later.
Okay, oh. Sorry. But
we got a long way to go here.
Yeah, they're not very explosive right now. They just don't have enough big plays.
The thing is that talent wise they do have good backs. When you have Rainey and Demps, they do have a lot of explosive potential. Like they can make a lot of big plays, but they're not using them right. Demps's 25-yard touchdown run, against Vanderbilt was his longest rush of the SEC season. That's ridiculous. He's Jeff Dims.
Absolutely. And we'll get more to that about the backs later, too. But we're just setting up. So the main thing to take away from that clip, he hits you with three guys. Only one's a running back. Then he claims that the running backs are the guys that we need to get the ball to, which I don't disagree with. But then why would you say Cooper and Hernandez are two of your top three explosive guys? Keep in mind also, Steve Adazio, you're going to hear him not only in that clip, but through the rest of these clips, say that, you know, the offense, like, we got as many explosives. We're explosive, explosive, explosive.
Yeah.
After Urban Meyer, like, all week has been saying they can't make a big play.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much he's just getting defensive and kind of going rogue here because he feels attacked.
Yeah.
Or feels insecure, more likely the second option.
Yeah, he's trying to protect his unit and make it seem like it's just as good, if not better, than the one, you know, Dan Mullen coached last year.
Even though Irby is saying that they can't make explosive plays.
Yeah. All
right.
So at some point, you work your tail off to make sure that you're as consistent and as productive as you can be, which I think we can be more of, okay?
All right, so there you have him. He concedes that, you know, or he at first makes a point like, hey, at some point, it's just about being consistent and being efficient. And then he says, but I think we can do better there. So it's like he's conceding that they haven't been as efficient and consistent as they should, but yet he still has the need to just, like, rant and defend his team.
Yeah, it's obviously, it's outrageous when you contradict yourself in a less than 10-second clip there, which Adazio does. I mean, they're just not being consistent and productive. It's literally just the same things. Like, he's just making stuff up at this point.
The fact that he mentions consistency is ridiculous, because the whole question was framed as, like, against Georgia, you were good. Against Vanderbilt, you were not good. And then I think we're being just as consistent, except we're not.
I believe the word inconsistencies was used. I believe Bob said, did you think you were over those inconsistencies? Right. I'm almost 100% sure that's how the question was framed.
Mm.
So, like, after about a minute and a half of defending himself, which you didn't get because we cut off, you know, we trimmed the fat, so to speak. But after a minute and a half of, like, being defensive and telling Bob he's stupid, then he goes, all right, we're not that consistent.
You're right, but, you know, all right.
What I do love about what we do right now is we have great time of possession. And that feeds directly with what? Great defense. Right? We drive the ball. We hold the ball. That's a good thing now. You know, like, people, because when you score compare, we drove the ball much more effectively against Georgia this year than we did a year ago. Much more. We just happened to have we got the ball in a short field, made a couple of big plays a year ago, but we didn't have much consistency driving that ball. We drove the ball well. So at the end of the day, those are important, but no one ever talks about that. Does anybody want to talk about time of possession? I know it's boring. It's boring. It's boring, but guess what time of possession means? The other guys aren't on the field as much, and we got a great defense now. We got a great defense.
All right, Steve. So the other reason that the other guys can't get on the field is because your great defense, which we totally agree with, they do have a great defense, is keeping them off the field. The offense likes, you know, he likes to pretend like the offense is playing defense on the other team by keeping them off the field, which they are to an extent because they run the ball way probably more than they should and they don't pass it enough. So that allows them to control the clock a little bit more than they should. But at the same time, the fact that they have such a good defense, that's what's keeping the other team off the field. Let's be honest here. Like, they get off the field real quick because they're so good, and then it's on the offense to do, you know, to keep the ball or not from there. But he's acting as if, like, you really want to be concerned about keeping your defense off the field when you have a bad defense, which is so backwards. They always act like, okay, our offense isn't very good because we spend all our time protecting our great defense. It doesn't make any sense. If your defense is so good, what are you concerned about? Just let them go out there and stop the other team, which this defense can certainly do. Spend your time on offense scoring points, not protecting your great defense. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. They keep making the point about how, like, they don't take chances because they have a great defense,
right,
which doesn't make sense.
No.
If anything, because you have a great defense, you can take more chances,
right,
because, you know, like, if you throw an interception, if you have a fumble, if you have some kind of turnover and you put the defense in bad field position, they can stop them, only give up a field goal or get another interception. It's absolutely outrageous to say that, like, you don't take shots down the field because you have a great punter and a great defense.
And the urgency to score points isn't there like it is in 2007 because the other team's not scoring points, so I understand that. But I've made this point before, and what you're doing by, you know, quote unquote, protecting the defense while you're on offense instead of scoring points, you're shortening the game and you're making it so that big plays change the complexion of a game.
Yeah.
You're not knocking teams out by going 13-3 against LSU. If Tebow throws one pick six there, which he's shown that he can do, the game's totally different. All of a sudden, they're in it within a field goal. Or they're tying it up, you know, depending on what point in the game that happens. You're making it so that you're the better team. You want a bigger sample size of game. You want the longest game that you can because they can't play with you. Yeah. When you're an inferior team, you want to shorten the game because you want it so that just a couple plays can change the complexion of a game. If you score points and you knock teams out, it doesn't matter if they have a big play or two. It won't matter.
It's what Mississippi State did well against Florida. They used those big plays completely to their advantage and almost beat Florida because of it.
Right.
And exactly. We've seen an example of this when the offense did struggle, like against Arkansas, and the defense gives up one or two big plays, which they're not going to go a year without giving up a big play.
Right.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it's a 23-20 game Arkansas could have won.
Exactly. Whereas if you're just scoring points, you're taking shots, you're making it a longer game, your ability, your talent, your speed's going to win out, and it's not going to matter as much. But by shortening the game, you're really just you're giving yourself the chance to shoot yourself in the foot down the road. Yeah.
Also, one more thing about that clip is he compares Georgia this year to Georgia last year.
And the scores, Georgia last year is 49-10, this year is 41-17.
Right, yeah. And Florida had 2 minutes of possession longer this year, not by any regard a big difference. And also, you don't need that much time possession because you're scoring all the time. Like, the defense did give them a shorter field, but that's not, like, the offense's fault of last year. Also, he's comparing the Georgia game this year, which is one of the offense's best games.
Right.
So it's like the best game of this year maybe was on par with last year, but what about all the other games?
Exactly.
What about all the other games when you've been inconsistent, when you haven't looked that good?
Right. And even then, the main point he's making is, like, we drove the ball and we kept the ball, even though 2 minutes difference.
Yeah.
Two minutes. Maybe two and a half.
Yeah.
It wasn't a 5 minute difference. It wasn't a 10 minute difference. 2.5 minutes. Way to go. Let's talk about time of possession, Steve. Let's do it.
With all that said, Steve, are you a little surprised that you haven't had bigger chunks of yards with the running backs? And I think in SEC play, Dempsey's, I think that 25-yarder for the score was as long as to go. And he got some
he's
fast
got a lot
cats.
Of explosives.
Yeah.
He's got the most explosives on our team right now.
Dempsey.
Yeah. So we just did a study. I don't know if you're here. We just did that study. We just did a comparison study to a year ago. The same explosive,
no less. Okay, so you hear AP writer, that's Mark Long. He asked him a question about, you know, are you surprised? You just talk about how explosive your backs are, which we've heard him do earlier in the clip. But Jeff Demp's 25-yard run against Vanderbilt was the longest he's had in SEC play. And Adazio's like, well, he's got so many explosives. Jeff Demp's not actually a terrorist. Again, he's talking about big plays, 20 yards or more. But UF's not the only person who did a study on their explosive plays. Bobby Colovi also dropped some numbers, and I think he's going to write this in a story at some point this coming week. He's not lying when they say that they have as many explosive plays as last year. I think they might have one or two more this year if we're defining them as 20 yards or more.
Yeah.
And the numbers were something like 23 to 20, let's just say. It was something close to that. But if you take away Charleston Southern and Troy from this year's game, and you only compare SEC games and you take away UF's non-conference games from before, they have like three less plays than last year. So actually, I guess it would be higher because I think the number was like 20 to 17 or 20 to 18.
Mm.
When you're just talking about SEC from this year to last year, they have a couple more last season. But then Bobby said if you expand that number to 25 yards or more, the plays from all of a sudden it becomes like an 18-9 difference or something. Like all of a sudden there's a 10 play difference from last year to this year. So, you know, pretty much what Bobby learned is that they're hitting those plays from 20 to 25, but they're getting no more than that. Whereas last year they were making huge plays. They're going for 50, they're going for 60, they're going for 45, whatever it is. And this year, they're just not getting that same production.
Right, and this is one of those things where you can look at those numbers, those are great numbers. They prove the point, but it's also a matter of an eye test, Steve. Like, you can sit there and break down study, and you can say you're getting all these 20-yard plays, but look, obviously, you probably run the numbers. You know that stat about 25 yards or more, mm-hmm. but just watch the game. Like, anyone who watches the games obviously can see that there's not those 62-yard runs being broken off by Jeff Demps and Chris Ranger.
Exactly. And I think the better stat, too, and I'm sure we'll get Bob to get this in his story, is, okay, you can make stats say whatever you want, pretty much. So you can set that arbitrary line of 20 wherever you want. We can set it at 25 to make them look bad. They can set it at 18 to make them look better. Yeah. And it's all pretty much in the same ballpark. But what I think, you know, the stat I'm curious to see is how many total yards have they racked up on plays of 20 yards or more? So, like, last year, maybe they racked up, I don't know, 500 yards on plays of 20 yards or more. And this year, they've only got 300 or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just throwing numbers out there. But I'm sure if we put that number in, the discrepancy is going to be monstrous because they're just hitting those 20-yarders and that's it, which is a big play. It's nice, but it's not the same as last year.
Right, and some part of it is just not taking the shots downfield.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, at some point, you got to at least throw the ball downfield. Like I was saying right before the show that I wish we had the ability to go back and like look at some of these. I was wondering how many times Tebow's thrown the ball like 20 yards or more down the field. Because even a lot of the big plays this year, and I would say probably more so than last year, are like catch and runs. Obviously, last year, Percy Harvin did a lot of that. You still threw the ball deep. Like, you had the deep option, Cooper on the fly route. And they've shown this year they can do that at times, but then it's like it works a couple times. Oh, let's go away from it.
Right. And that's the thing. I think Lewis Murphy was big for that last year because he wasn't a catch and run guy. Anybody who watched Lewis Murphy play, he made big plays, and his average yards per catch was really good. Yeah. It was like 18 or something like that. But he would just beat a guy deep and catch a touchdown over the top, or he would beat a guy deep and then get tackled. But he wasn't a big yak guy. He wasn't racking up yards after the catch. Like Aaron Hernandez has made a bunch of plays this year where he catches the ball 10, 15 yards downfield and runs for 10, 15, 20 more yards. Yeah. And that's not how they got him last year.
Right. It should also be noted, I think part of the reason why they're struggling to do that, and they've kind of alluded to this a little bit, is some struggles on the offensive line because it takes more time for those plays to develop downfield. You got to give, you know, Tebow 2-3 extra seconds in the pocket so the receiver can get downfield and he can launch it. And it's twofold. One, he doesn't have that time in the pocket. And when you have a quarterback like Tebow who's like 1 second, 2 second, one read, and then I'm going to run right away, you don't have time to develop those big pass plays down the field.
But they've shown they have a guy or a couple guys who can get downfield. Like a Deontay Thompson type, as much as I've hated on him
or
before.
Cooper,
especially, who has done it before. Right. Is it just a choice they're making to not do it, or is...
Yeah, they're protecting the defense. I don't know. I mean, they admit that they're not taking the shots they are.
Right. But they say they want more big plays, but they're not taking the shots. Like, do they not realize
They just want it to happen, dude. Like, it's like, we're not going to make it happen. We just need it to happen on its own.
Just to fall
organically. Like,
right. Well, I mean, that's why you see those plays occasionally two or three games ago, I think, especially Mississippi State. You see the plays where Deontay Thompson has walked off the field, you know, with, like, his shrugging his shoulders, looking, what's going on. Yeah.
You've seen Brandon James do it, too.
Yeah, exactly. When I'm open 30 yards down the field, you don't throw the ball.
Right.
Now we're striving for what right now? More balance, right? That means less touches, right? That means the amount of touches are less and you're dividing them three ways. You see what I'm saying? So in one breath it's, throw it, balance it. Next breath it's, where are the runs? Well, it's in there. I mean, it's in there.
All right, so the important thing to take away is that there's less touches, which means the touches are less. Everyone got that? Yeah. Can everyone follow that audio?
I got you, Kyle.
Okay, everyone understand Steve first. All right, so pretty much what he's saying here is, like, he's in this conundrum that the media and everyone's just placing on him because they want him to throw the ball more, but they want the running backs to get more touches. And he doesn't know what to do. He's flummoxed at this because he knows if he throws the ball more, he can't run it as much. So what's an offensive coordinator to do? And I sort of agree with him here in that Tebow just sucks up so many of your offensive plays, especially right now. He is running the ball way more than he ever has, which is scary. Yeah. He's getting 15 yards a carry every freaking game. Like, literally every freaking
game. Yeah,
every
had 15 game, he's had 15 rushes.
Unbelievable. More. So, like, at some point, you know, Tim Tebow's a great player. You got to sit him down and be like, Tim, you're killing us right now. You're sucking up all of our plays. We can't get any runs. We can't get any throws. It's literally just Tim Tebow running for 3 yards on half of our offensive plays right now.
Yeah. Right, and Steve, I'd offer the question, where are the runs? I'd ask, where are the points, Steve? Where are the points?
It's like a Twinkie commercial.
Didn't you hear them? They're there.
Yeah, they're there.
They're there.
They're not on the scoreboard, apparently. Right.
But, I mean, it's a good point. It's like, all right, the running backs are getting, sometimes they're averaging like 5 yards or 5 carries each a game. They're getting like 15 split between the three of them. That's not enough. So, okay, I got a crazy idea. You got a quarterback who likes to keep it on the option, right? How about we just make them hand it off every once in a while? Huh? How about we don't put option in every once in a while? It's like, okay, Tim, you got to hand it off on this one. No? That's a horrible... Like, no. Can he not do that?
No.
That's Florida's offense. We're not going to change the offense.
Right.
It's working. They're 19-0.
That's right. Have you ever been 19-0, Phil?
Not in anything. No. What is 19-0?
See, my thing was this, is that I feel like he absolutely knows it's Tebow, but he's not willing to admit fault, that it's Tebow's fault.
Of course not, because
It's not rocket science. Like, he acts like it's like, what's the meaning of life? Like, it's the same level of difficulty for him to answer the question of how come you can't balance, you can't get more throws and more runs for the running backs. It's easy. It's because Tebow is running the ball 100 million times a game. Yeah. Literally, 100 million.
We've done studies. Yes.
But you missed that study. We just did that study.
Not only that, but he's been less productive running the ball. It's it'd be a slightly different conversation if he's running 15 times for like 100 yards.
Right, that's not happening.
That's not happening. Last time he had like like 18 rushes for like 29 yards. He literally, I'm pretty sure he averaged less than 2 yards a carry in the Vanderbilt game.
Right.
How much of this is the line, like you've said before?
I think it's a negligible amount. I think if you want to make the point about the line, it's what Phil said earlier, which is like they can't hold the eyes off for long enough to get long plays downfield, which is whatever. I mean, that's okay. But what they did on the first series against Georgia was perfect. It was like, let's take all the decision making out of Tebow's hand and let's take the 5 second blocking out of the line's hands. We're just going to run quick hitting passes. They pass the ball all the way downfield, but they just moved it quickly. They got the ball to their receivers quick and they made some plays after that. That's what the offense should look like if you're concerned about the line. Just get it out of Tebow's hands quick, get it to the running backs quick, and let them go from there. Just adapt to what's going well or what's not going well.
Right. And the other thing they did in the Georgia game is they got rid of the bonsai offense. That apparently worked too well.
Yeah.
No, let's see. We had our best game offensively. We weren't audibling as much. Our first quarter, we had like two touchdown drives. He throws two touchdown passes to Cooper. All right, let's put the bonsai back in for Vanderbilt. Let's try and score less points. We don't want to hurt the defense. We want to put the defense in a good position.
You mean the hurry-up offense that slows down the game?
Yeah, it's absolutely outrageous. And it worked. They're like, after the game, they're like, yeah, we didn't really run it. It worked really well. All right, let's put it back in. Yeah. That's not good game planning.
Steve, you talked about the defense being good. Everybody knows it's good.
Yep, they're great.
Does your mentality change knowing it's
yes.
so good?
Is yes. That,
and what does it
do?
It's
the plan to win.
Right.
I mean, yes. Yes and yes. We went into the Tennessee game with that mindset. I know people don't want to hear that, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. We beat LSU at LSU with that mindset. I don't know. What was how many wins did they have at LSU on the road at the stadium?
34.
Okay, so people said, well, what about compare it to LSU a year ago? Well, wait, we didn't play LSU a year ago in LSU. At LSU, what we did was we worked hand-in-hand with our defense. We controlled the clock. I think Charlie said they ran 47 plays on defense against LSU. What were we talking about? It was a non-event. It was a big event. And that's why we were one of the huge reasons. We work well together. We got a great defense, and our coaching staff has really, really gelled well together. We all see it clearly. We have one objective, all for one for all, to do one thing. Win.
So Charlie Strong, Steve Addazio, and Urban Meyer, the three musketeers, one for all for one. They're all about the team mentality here. But, you know, you hear that's Adam Gorney, Gator Bait writer. He drops a question, you know, your defense is great. Is your offensive mentality changing because of that? Addazio, yes, 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 and yes. So he's copying what we said before. But we don't think the mentality's changing for the better, Steve. The problem is you're somehow in this weird, like, zone where your defense is so good that you're going to try to protect them and just put everything on their shoulders. I don't understand. Whereas you could try to, I don't know, score points maybe and then let the defense bail you out if something goes wrong.
Yeah, and he talks about how that was their mentality going into the Tennessee game. That's really good.
That's convenient.
It's really good when you enter the SEC season being like, we're going to score as few points as possible, put it all on the defense, we're going to make them have to keep opponents at 10 points or less, and we're going to win. We're going to beat Tennessee,
yeah.
A much worse opponent. Like, there's just not as much talent there, especially Tennessee's offense with Jonathan Kropkin throwing quarterback, who's doing well now but was not doing well then. It's in the swamp. All right, really the best result for us is a 23-13 win.
Also, let's point at something out here. Last season, 2008, they had a good defense in 2008. Their defense was very good. In fact, they allowed less points per game in 2008 than they did in 2006.
Yeah.
They had a good, great defense in 2008 also. And their mentality's changed for them. They didn't stop them from putting up points last year. It's like, okay, we've decided that we don't want to blow teams out by 35. We want to win by a touchdown or two touchdowns, 10 points now. That's what we want to do. That's how your mentality's changed. But let's be honest, your mentality's changed because of who you have on offense and your offensive identity. I mean, we can't ever be honest when it comes to this. But it's like, don't act like your defense is so good and they're so good that they're preventing you from scoring points also. That's not the case. That's not the case at all.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just totally outrageous. When you think back to last year, it's like, oh, Steve, last year you just scored too quickly, right? You're like, oh, I can't take 8-play drives because we scored 2 plays, 80-yard drives. It's like, the defense does not stop
like,
them scoring.
Yeah, like the offense came off the field after, like, you know, they scored 2 touchdowns in 5 minutes, and Charlie Strong's like, what are you doing, Steve? Steve, what's the plan? All for one and one for all? You're scoring in 3 minutes. What are we supposed to do with 14 points?
Yeah.
What, Steve, what's my defense supposed to do with a 3-touchdown lead, Steve?
No. What would they do? Steve, you're letting us get too many three and outs. We're getting you the ball back too many possessions. We don't want this. That's more opportunities for you to turn the ball over. No, we don't want any of this.
The thing that infuriates me about this so much is that when you tip, you know, when you think of like a grinded out team, like a win with defensing, you think of like the old Ravens team that won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer as the quarterback,
right,
and like a bad offense.
That's what you
the
do.
The Gators don't have a terrible offense by definition. Like, their players are good. They have explosives. They have so many explosives. So they can do things, but they're just, it's all mentally, it's all in their game plan. It's all, right, like, clearly, they're just not planning to win right.
It's a one for all and all for one.
Is there a little bit of a danger, though, just in general, with that kind of style of play, where it could be where you're playing not to lose a little bit?
No one said that. I didn't say that.
Well, just when the defense is so good and you're trying to control the clock instead of maybe taking some shots.
You said that. I did not say that.
No, I'm asking you.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you. No, play not to lose. I don't. You have to explain that for me. I don't know that. No, play to win. Play to win. Play to win. Control the ball. Get your shots where you can get them. Play great defense. Play great in the special teams. That's plan to win. That's play to win. And that's what I think we're doing a pretty good job at.
All right, so much like Herm Edwards, Steve Adazio, plays to win. Just getting it out there. But, you know, you hear that's Jeremy Fowler, Orlando Sentinel beat writer. And, you know, he drops a question that's where we've been talking about this whole podcast, which is you're not playing to win. You're not playing to score points. Now, Adazio's right. He never used the words play not to lose. He never used those words technically never came out of his mouth. But you hear Fowler define it for him. He says, you're leaning on your defense because they're so good. You're not taking any shots. And Adazio acts like that's not what he's been saying this whole time. No, that is what you've been saying the entire time. After Fowler defined what he was talking about for you, because Adazio doesn't know what it means to play not to lose, so Fowler broke it down for him so that he could understand him. And then, literally, that's exactly what you've been saying for this entire time. Your entire rant is how good the defense is, so we're going to do is try to control the clock. We're not trying to score points, we're just trying to control the clock, and we've been doing that so good, and that's what Fowler says to you, and all of a sudden, no, that's not what we're trying to do. What the heck?
At the beginning there, it says, you know, that style, and Steve says, what style? It's like he didn't understand what he was just talking about. It's like, oh, I don't know the style you were just talking about for 3 minutes there.
Yeah, no, and he says, well, Steve told you that they take shots when they can. So apparently they can't. They can't ever take shots
because
they take one or two a game.
Right. Yeah, that's unbelievable. He's like, yeah, we get them in. What's the plan to win? Play great defense, play special teams, take shots when you can. So, yeah, every SEC defense is just way better than the Florida offense. They just can't ever take shots, right?
Funny you should mention that, because apparently every SEC defense is scheming better for Florida than anyone ever has before, according to Tebow and Urban Meyer this week.
That's the thing Bobby was outraged with. He was just saying, like, you know, he asked a question about, you know, defense, why have you guys been struggling? What have defense been doing? And Tebow said something like, oh, well, they just did a really good job of, like, knowing our tendencies and knowing our scheme. And Bobby's point is, okay, that's their job. Like, did you think that they weren't going to prepare for you that week?
Yeah.
Your job is to still make stuff happen with the defense knowing your tendencies and schemes. And then it seems like they don't know their tendencies or schemes as an offense because they have no identity.
Yeah.
They know that they're not good right now. That's what they should know. I mean, I think defense is just like, oh, well, look, they're not really going to try to win, so we're just going to try and play along with their game plan, try and get a couple turnovers, and we're going to hang around in the game because Florida doesn't know how to put lesser teams away. It's totally outrageous the way they're playing.
And as horrible as their offense is right now and their game planning is, specifically for the offense and their mentality, it's still good enough for them to win a championship.
No, yeah.
Because their defense is so incredible that this is still good enough to win a championship. And, like, we all think that. So we're not saying, like, they can always lean on, and you hear Adazio do it in almost every clip, we're 9-0, it's all about winning, we only care about winning. Win.
They didn't just call it the pickle boat.
Right, because winning fixes everything. So he doesn't have to answer for anything while they're winning.
Yeah.
As long as they keep winning, which they will as a result of the defense, not the offense, then Adazio doesn't have to answer for anything. He's fine. He's off the hook. Nothing the offense does. They're not on. Apparently, they're on the same. They're on the field at the same time. They're all together out there.
All for one.
It's never like, for some reason, the offense can't be separated from what the defense is doing.
Right. That's the real crime here. Heaven forbid the defense has maybe a bad game. I don't think it'll happen. I think they'll finish the rest of the year. They go undefeated.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
I mean, heaven forbid they have one bad game. Like, Steve Adazio is going to blame the defense? It's like the defense carried you for all nine games this season.
19 games.
Yeah, say they lose it. Say they score 20 points and the defense randomly gives up 21 points, probably because Florida had a turnover and gave a short field. Mm-hmm. Is it all of a sudden going to be like, well, we did what we had to do. We had time of possession. We ran the ball a lot. And it's just totally outrageous. You got to score more points, Steve. Yeah.
The problem, and I think the most frustrating thing for us, is that they lean on this, you know, we're winning things so much that they won't admit fault. And it's like, all you have to do is win games. And sure, that's what you're paid to do, but you're also paid to win games convincingly and build a program to where you will win down the line against no matter what kind of team you face. Alabama's defense is so good, they could force turnovers and score on those turnovers against Florida.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, I want to say this. The reason we're doing this isn't because we're mean or we, like, hate the football team or, like, we're trying to make noise, like, make controversy. Like I was saying before, pretty much every other team I've covered at this school and every other coach that I've come into contact with, I don't want to say I don't want to say Adazio's alone on the football teams. There are a couple coaches that do this. They don't spot you anything. They don't concede any deficiencies to you. So when you come out there and you there are truths that we know. You're not scoring as many points as you were. Okay, you're not doing as well as you did last year. Turnover differential is pathetic. Your red zone efficiency is pathetic. We can't ever get spotted that. There's never an acknowledgement of, yes, you are right, reporter. We're not doing as well in these things, and we're going to try to fix it. It's all a big logic circle about why things aren't going the way they're supposed to, because everything to them, they want to spin it so that it is going the way it's supposed to. Like, oh, this isn't happening, that's because we're doing this, you know? And every other coach I've covered at this school, it's like, you know, Billy Donovan, you didn't rebound so well today. You're right, we didn't rebound so well today because of this, this, and this. We're going to try to fix it. Or, you know, whoever, Mary Wise, you didn't hit well today. Yes, you're right. We're going to try to fix this, 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 and this. Like, it just never happens with them. Never. And especially Adazio. Urban's a little bit better. He'll spot you some things. Adazio and some of the other coaches never will.
Yeah. Right. That's because, and so therefore, when you write about the offense, all you can write is, here's the stats, they've sucked, and them saying, we're great. Right. Like, there's nothing wrong here. You can't write a story that's like, here's the problems, this is what they're doing to fix them. Like, when you give them their side to, like, respond, they're just like, oh, nothing to see here, nothing wrong. You can't write about the fixes. So the articles just get repetitive. All we can keep writing is, look, the offense still sucks. And I don't think that they fixed their problems in the red zone either.
No.
They're just facing worse defenses, and they're scoring from outside the red zone a little bit more the last few games. So when they are against Alabama, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? Because it's not working as much.
And what are we supposed to do? Like, we have a job to be objective, okay?
Yeah.
So everyone out there sitting at home in front of their TV, no matter how big of a Gators fan you are, or if you just like sports and you're watching the Gators play, you all see the same things we see, and the coaches see it too. They pretend like they don't, but they see it too. They see that they're turning the ball over at an alarming rate. They see that they can't punch it in the red zone. They see Tebow's not as effective as he was last year. Everyone sees the exact same thing. But when we go to them to talk about it, all they give us back is how everything's fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to write that everything's fine because everything's not fine.
Yeah.
And there are people out there, they can say everything's fine enough to win, and we'll all write that. They'll win because of the defense. Everything's okay enough to win, but everything's not fine as far as the offense goes. Everything's not going according to plan. But when that's all they're willing to give us, it seems like we're so freaking combative and we just hate Steve Adazio. We hate the offense. We just want to make noise. We want to make waves. I'm just being objective. My objective opinion is that everything's not fine, and that's probably everyone's objective opinion, including the coaches who are BSing us to our faces.
Right, and that's why every discussion with Adazio sounds so combative. He starts the conversation on the defensive. I imagine, like, Steve Adazio, like, gearing himself up before he comes out to talk to the media. He's like, all right, I got my game face on.
No,
I'm all ready to go. They're going to take some jabs at me. I'm going to hit them back. I'm going to counterattack.
It's so funny you said that because you weren't at the practice afterwards, but I just pictured because, like, they come out of this door out of a room and like one of the SID's Denver parlor leads him out, and I just picture him like he's in the locker here, he's in the room, and like he's just jumping up and down like getting loose, and he's like, hit me, Denver, hit me, and Denver just slaps him across the face to get him pumped. He's like, one more, Denver, one more, boom, I gotta fight off a horde of 20 journalists today, one more, Denver, and he slaps him across the face. Yeah, maybe he does a headbutt, you know, like he has a player headbutt him with a helmet, pulls the John, he comes out bleeding. Like, this is what I, like, John, this is how he comes out. He comes out ready to fight every time. It's like, I don't want to fight. I just want to talk. Let's be real. You talk about how real of a guy you are. Let's just be honest with each other for about 10 minutes here. We can have a cordial relationship. But instead, it's a fight every single time.
Right. And that's another thing, as a reporter, why you miss Dan Mullen. Because the beginning of last year, the offense struggled. First of all, Dan Mullen, I mean, obviously their personalities are a little bit different. Stevie Dunn's naturally is a fiery guy, but you don't have to be so combative. Dan Mullen would at least answer the many questions. The beginning of last year, yes, the offense struggled. Then the Arkansas game turned around. They clicked. They went on. But when the offense wasn't good, he at least admitted that. He was like, we're trying to get there. We're trying to deal with these things. It's a multitude of different factors. It's like Urban Meyer said this week. It's not one thing that's a problem. It's a bunch of different issues on the offense.
Yeah.
The offensive line stinks. Tebow's making bad decisions. The receivers aren't getting open. Like, blah, blah, blah. You're turning over the ball. You're not as efficient in the red zone. One of the things also that we were talking about that I think is very much clear, and like you, Kyle, I know you asked about this week, and they gave you like no real answer, is Tebow, when they're going on third and short plays, first of all, they're being less productive. That's obvious. Like, there was in the Mississippi State game, they had second and goal and third and goal from the one. Tebow could not get in on two straight plays, and that's against the great Mississippi State Bulldogs defense. Because they're jamming everyone up, they bring everyone in, and then run Tebow up the middle, which is outrageous. Spread them out.
Right. It's so stupid, because what they do on short yardage now every time is, instead of like running their normal formation, spreading everyone out, and then you're isolating it to the point where it's, you got Tebow on like one backer and you're good to go. They bring in two fullbacks, two tight ends, pack everyone in the box. The defense loads up. Now it's Tebow on a lineman and two backers, and he's got to pick up the yard. Mm-hmm. And the line's got more guys to block. They got more blitzes to protect. And it's a lot harder on everyone because they won't spread everyone out. And I asked Tebow in a press conference. I said, Tim, you know, you're the best short yardage running back in college football over your career. You are. But you haven't been as effective. And third, is it because teams are loading up the box on you because you're going to more jumbo personnel? And he responded with, I'm not sure what our tendencies have been if we have been going to it more than last year. So that's another thing. It's like, well, the defenses know what your tendencies have been, but you can't tell me whether or not you're going to more jumbo personnel. I can tell you that you are. The defense can tell you that you are, but you don't know if you are. Is it because you don't want to cop to it? Yeah. Like, maybe if you just said, yeah, it was easier when we were spreading things out, maybe they could get back to that. I don't know, but it's like, no weakness can be admitted for some reason.
Right, that's the outrageous thing. And we don't have a count, but it's not like it's close. It's not like it's like 55% of the time they line up a jumbo. They line up a jumbo like 95% of the time right now. I can't remember the last time they spread Tim Tebow out on the goal line and he ran it in. And you look at it, that's why the eye has been more productive, because you're minimizing the advantage when you run Tebow out of the shotgun and you bring everyone in the box.
Right. Yep.
That the whole purpose of Tebow being there single, him by himself, empty backfield, is when you spread everyone out, there's less people for him to be. If you bring everyone in, you might as well run the eye and block like
there,
that.
There were times in the last 2 years when Tim Tebow's played quarterback where it's been third and short, and everyone in the building, including me, knows that he's going to run it up the middle, but they come out all spread out, and they're like, I have to check myself for a second. I'm like, oh, you're going to throw it here? Mm-hmm. And then Tebow runs it up the middle again.
Right, every time.
And it's like, everyone knows it, but you're making the defense guard the outside of the play. Like, okay, we got a man up on the four receivers that are lined up and the back in the backfield. Now it's like, okay, everyone in. Everyone come on in. We'll all jam in this little 10-yard space. And Tebow, you're going to have to just, like, break three tackles to get a yard.
Right. And thankfully, they realized this just a little bit the last game when they had that fourth and one play. And everyone, you see the jumbo package coming in. Yeah. You're like, oh, here's another failed Tebow run up the middle. Oh, look, they ran to the right option, Jeff Demp, 25-yard touchdown. No one, like, touched him. Like,
brilliant,
there's no one on the outside because they bring everyone in the middle. So either you're going to have to do more of that, and the option play, you know, can have – there can be miscues on that when you're running it fourth and one. Just spread them out. Like, run the – like, stop running jumbo with a Tebow in the empty backfield.
Right. One other thing about Mullen and Dazio that you mentioned earlier, do you think it's just because Dazio doesn't have as good of a grasp on the offense? Because from what I've heard of the audio and from what I've seen on the field, I feel like I'm watching a man who's confused about the system he's running coaching.
He doesn't know what works and what doesn't. That's the problem. Like, I think like he knows like what they're trying to do, but in my opinion, this is just my opinion, this isn't like an objective truth that we've been talking about, I just think like he's confused as to why things work or don't work. And then he is caught up in this rationalization thing that they do where it's just whatever happens is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, Steve Adazio, like, everyone's like, oh, like, you want to keep it within the system. You want to keep it within the program. So you just promote Steve Adazio to offensive coordinator this year. Personally, I can't help but look and say that was a bad decision based on what happened. Because Steve Adazio has been an offensive coordinator in the past, but it's Syracuse. I'm not sure if they ran the spread then. Obviously, he's been involved in this program coaching the offensive line, but you're not involved in the offensive play calling as much at all, hardly, even though somebody says that they called all the run plays. Well, that's great. He knows the blocking.
Yeah.
But it's like Dan Mullen and Urban Meyer were together 8 years. They knew the tendencies of defenses. They perfected this spread offense that was so magnificent. Now, obviously, there was going to be a drop off this year because of the loss of Percy Harvin. I'm not saying if Dan Mullen was here, they would still be scoring 45 points per game in SEC games. But I know I will obviously absolutely say if Dan Mullen's here, the offense is better right now than it would be.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the thing. Like we want to talk about like last year to this year, and all that you can ask and all that the team asks of, there's no way that the team doesn't ask this of themselves, what I'm about to say. You don't have to be as good as you were last year, but you need to be as good as you can be with the players you have right now.
Right.
And that's not what they're doing.
Right.
Like, okay, 100% of last year's team playing at 100% is better than this year's team playing at 100% based on who they had. Yeah. And that's fine, and everyone understands that.
Right.
But you know what, Steve? This year, you're not playing at 100% of your capabilities. You're playing poorly. You're playing maybe 75%, maybe even 50%. Whatever it is, you have guys that can make plays for you, and you can be better than you are right now. And everyone in that locker room knows it, and you know it. And I know that that's what you guys talk about when the doors are shut, because there's no way that Urban is happy with what's going on right now.
Right. It just makes the offense look so bad because they show minuscule glimpses of this. Yeah. They come out of that Georgia game, they're throwing the ball around the field, and that's what they can be. They
right.
could be that in the entire game. Now, I'm not saying they have to throw the ball 60 times a game, but look what happened when you threw the ball and then you ran the ball again just as productive. They march down the field their first two possessions, it's like, oh, the Florida offense is back, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, we scored 21 points, we're up 10 points, let's just run the ball all the time.
And the best thing, and just going back to how combative everything is a perfect illustration of this. After the Georgia game, I charted the whole Georgia game, how many first down runs and passes they had, and it was a very good balance. If anything, it was like one or two more passes, the best balance they had all year, I noticed. And then Urban came out first and addressed the media. One of the things he says to us, we had great balance on first down today. We came out passing run right in line with what I saw objectively. Urban comes out, says it, boom. I get to Adazio later. I drop him a question. Hey, Steve, you guys really had some of the best balance on first down you've had all season. It's not just coming from me. Your head coach said it. You guys had some of the best balance. Was there something you saw in the Georgia defense, or did you just something that you felt like you needed to do? This is what we've been doing all year. This is what we've been doing all season. Nothing changed. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I'm attacking him because I'm going off of what he did before. There can't just be an admittance of, like, okay, we weren't doing this before, but we did it now, and look how good we are, and we can just talk about that together. It's, screw you, kid. This is what we've been doing. Whatever you saw, this is what we've been doing. Don't worry about it. It's like, it's not just me, dude. It's your head coach. It's your head freaking coach.
Right, and the thing I can't understand, obviously, like, I don't have any inside info on the inner workings of the Gator Circle, but to me, like, I just can't understand what is going through Urban Meyer's head, like, this far in the season. Like, obviously, I'm trying to go through what I would be thinking if I was Urban Meyer. Now, he's like, all right, I've won 19 games in a row. I'm 9-0 this season. I can win out with this defense. So I think that's probably why, like, nothing really drastic has changed. But if this defense was not this great, first of all, they'd have one or two losses. Secondly, I can't imagine why, like, there's just, Urban's got to take over, there's got to be some kind of change. Like, you can't allow, there's got to be some kind of accountability where, like, you go to Steve and you're like, look, man, this is not good enough. Like, you can't be this bad with this talent.
Yeah.
Like, you're making them worse. Like, I don't know why somebody else should call the plays. I don't know what the answer is, but he's got to do something. Like, at some point, it's Urban Meyer's accountable for all this.
Okay, now we're going to move on to the South Carolina preview portion of the podcast. Phil, what do you got about this weekend's game?
Yeah, Florida heads to Columbia this Saturday to face a South Carolina team that is going through what seems to be an annual slump here. They seem to come out of the gates real well and then fall off, similar to, sadly, my USF Bulls. The Gamecocks have now lost two games in a row. They were trounced at Tennessee 31-13 and then lost at Arkansas 33-16. You know, it's just not going well for Steve Spurrier there up in Columbia. This will be the fifth time that now he's facing Florida. You know, I wouldn't expect anything really great from this game. Steven Garcia is playing a little bit better as the Gamecocks quarterback, well, at least compared to like last year when I think he was 6 of 18 for... He was splitting time with Chris Smelly, though, last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, a struggling offense. They like to pass the ball, which is not a good matchup against Florida's very good pass defense. But, yeah, South Carolina is the second-best passing offense in the SEC. So you got the best pass passing defense, Florida. So that's an interesting matchup. But, you know, I don't really expect anything great. The best, one, at least South Carolina, one of their better players is Eric Norwood, linebacker who was actually leading the conference in sacks earlier this season.
A one-time Heisman candidate from Kyle, I believe, right?
Yeah, he made my first ballot. In the five hole.
Yeah, you sank his ship for the season.
He hasn't done much since then.
No, I thought he had, you know, his numbers were real good. They haven't been as good since the beginning of the year.
Let's talk about their defense. Is there anything to talk about with that? Because, you know, we've just spent a lot of time talking about Florida's offense. Is there anything they can do?
You know? Well, Adam, they gave up 41 points to Georgia, and they've just come off giving up 30 points in two straight games to Tennessee and Arkansas.
Yeah, they made Jonathan Crompton look like Peyton Manning.
So. Yeah, Jonathan Crompton, that was like his breakout game. Yeah. So, not feeling like we're going to see a lot of great defense from South Carolina Saturday.
Mm. One thing I will say for South Carolina is it looks like those three out of the last four, are all on the road. So, yeah. You know, maybe they're a little bit better at home. I don't really know. But
they have not lost at home.
You pretty much know what you're going to get out of this game, though. It's just, like, so standard. Like, they're not going to score more than 17 points no matter what, and that's generous. That's, like, worst-case scenario. And then Florida's offense will disappoint you to some varying degree between, you know, 24 points and, I don't know, 45 on a good day.
Well, that's so, what the defense scores kind of bumps it up.
Right, of course. So, you know, who really knows? Or the offense will get off to a great start like they did against Georgia and then shut it down from there. So, I don't know. I mean, you know what you're watching. Every game's the same at this point. Florida's going to win. There's no problems there. Don't have to worry about that. Maybe you've, as Adam made the joke before, maybe you've heard Steve Spurrier used to coach Florida, so you'll get that subplot that goes along with this game.
CBS will love that.
And, you know, just standard. There's nothing to talk about, really.
They're going to have a Steve Spurrier cam just on him, charting his reactions. It wouldn't surprise me, actually.
About the offense, I literally think if you're going to shut down the offensive game plan the way they do, well, just put in the backups in the middle of the second quarter.
Yeah, sure.
When you go up 21-0, if you're just going to have Tebow run the ball or hand the ball off, just put in John Brantley. Like, let's get the backups some work. Like, it's totally outrageous.
All right, well, since there's not a whole lot to talk
about. One thing I will say is the defense is healthier / absolutely less suspended than it's been all season.
The team as a whole, actually, is really getting healthy.
Right, yeah. So I think the defense only going to get stingier from here. You got Spikes back. The defensive line is healthier than they've been the last few weeks. So, I mean, they're starting to come around to full strength here, which is a little bit of a scary thought.
Terrifying, yeah.
So, you know, keep a lookout for that. That's pretty much the only little drop of knowledge I'm going to give you. There's nothing else to say.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and do score predictions and round this out. Phil, let's start with yours so you can't piggyback on somebody else.
Well, since I had this pick 2 days ago, I'm going to stick with that. Florida 27, South Carolina 10.
Got it.
All right. I'm going to do 30-6.
That is 1 point off of what I was planning to say.
Great.
I was going to say 31-6.
You always got to account for two field goals.
Yeah.
Three field goals. Beast, I went three field goals this week.
Yeah.
But at least two field goals you got to have in your score.
Oh, geez.
It's
that
a rule.
Really does. No, I'm stuck to that. I really want to say 34-6 now, actually. Are we cool with this? Can I change
mine? Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
All right. 34-6.
You've seen the error of your ways.
That's two Caleb Surtis field goals, possibly a miss.
Anytime you have a Lou Groza semifinalist on your team, you got to get him some action.
With the whatever, Ray guy. Is Chad Henry up for the Ray guy?
Yeah, he's a semifinalist at least.
Yeah, you got a Ray guy semifinalist holding for you, too, I think.
Well, he's just that great punter. You know, that's why they don't need a good offense.
He's got an NFL leg, all right? It matters to have an NFL offense.
Chad is great.
Anytime you can run the ball and then punt it away and put it in your defense's hand, that's what you want to do.
Yep.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's briefly talk about the Florida basketball team. They played an exhibition game Monday night that we previewed on the last podcast against Weber International, statewide powerhouse Weber International, that is. Absolutely destroyed and broke 100 points. They look very good. Kyle, you were there with me. Give some quick impressions from what you saw.
Vernon Macklin sucks.
Confirmed.
Rest of the team, pretty good. Yeah. Like, I don't know what else to say. I mean, they played well against Weber, but it's Weber. The first 5 minutes were a little disastrous. Weber was just like, it turned into a slam dunk contest between number 31 and 23 or whoever. On Weber first.
Tyrell Harper.
For a couple seconds there. Yeah. And Marvin Williams. Not to be confused with the Hawks, Marvin Williams. But, you know, they righted the ship right away and just ran away with it, won by like 50 points. But, yeah, I mean, really the only thing I'm taking away from these early exhibition games is Kenny Boynton looks awesome, much better than I thought. Eric Murphy looks like he's going to be a bigger contributor than I thought. And Vernon Macklin sucks.
This is obviously really difficult to read, but maybe just a glimpse. Can you get any glimpse if Florida's defense will be better? in years past.
I mean, know they don't play a whole lot of defense against Weber International. Okay. Like, the, here's the thing. This is something I want to talk about anyway. When they have a lineup of Irving Walker, Kenny Boyden, Ray Shipman, like a Chandler Parsons type, and Alex Tyus, they're going to press disgustingly against teams. When you have Ray Shipman at small forward, like, he got a bunch of steals against inferior competition still, but that's a super athletic lineup, and that will help them on defense. I like that lineup when I saw it on the court.
Yeah. I mean, height-wise, I'd be interested to see how he matched up all three.
It'd be just a purely running team.
It's only about the attitude, really, and you just don't know if, like, you can't gauge their attitude off these games because it's just scrubs that they're running out. But, you know, it's just about committing to defense. Like, they could have committed to defense last year. They just chose not to. Like, yeah. I mean, Billy Donovan's trying to make them play defense. But at some point, I mean, defense is an effort thing. It's like rebounding. So will this team be able to get a leader who makes them commit to defense? I mean, that's all that matters. You see the Celtics, like, you know, they get Kevin Garnett. Yeah, he's a great defender by himself, but he can't defend everyone by himself. But, I mean, he was enough to just make everyone play defense. And, like, you just need that. They just need to commit to defense.
I don't think they actually have a leader like that in that situation.
Well, yeah.
A defensive-minded leader. So that doesn't bode well for them if that's what you're going to direct. I think Donovan is a good enough coach to potentially, you know, force him into
You hope so.
Defense,
but, I mean, he hasn't been able to the last couple of years. So.
I mean, that's with worse talent, I think, even than he has this year.
That's his boys.
I don't know. We'll
make them any better. Like,
we'll see. You can't tell anything off these first two games. Yeah. Like, except that Vernon Macklin sucks.
Yeah.
Which
feel completely safe saying after those two exhibitions.
Yeah, and it's
the worst excuse ever for that, by the way, from Billy Donovan was that Vernon Macklin suffered because he was playing against people who were so much shorter than him. And so much less. That's why he couldn't rebound. Those guys were
it's
so
too
short.
Easy.
It was too easy for Vernon Macklin out there.
Just like the offense, man. It's like Florida's offense.
Yeah, because I mean,
Whoever started like 6'5" guys. Vernon Macklin 6'10".
That's the thing. It's like you can see like maybe they scored a bunch of like. All right, there is a scenario where like he has a tough time defending a smaller guy one-on-one because he's quicker and can kind of like exploit him. But he should be able to block shots. Rebound and score over midgets. Like, it only gets easier from there. The shorter your competition is, the easier it is to do those three things.
Yeah. Well, there's the game plan. That's all you have to do to guard Vernon Macklin. You just put a really small guy on him and shut him down.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Billy Donovan only wants three things from Vernon Macklin. And they're like the most vague things of all time. It's like, I wanted to be active, I wanted to be athletic, and I wanted to make the plays that he needs to make.
Right.
So all three things that cannot be measured on a stat sheet.
Exactly.
So I feel a little, I'm a little weary saying this stuff. I just want to talk about real quick the Joe Kim Noah thing. Because if you haven't seen this clip, definitely go online like right away. I think it's on YouTube. I think ESPN linked to it. And it's on, I forget which paper did it, the Chicago
Sun-Times.
One of their columnists when Joe Kim Noah was drafted, he wrote this really scathing column about how, like, Joe Kim Noah blows and, like, he's never going to be good. And in the column it said, if Joe Kim Noah becomes a productive NBA player in the next 3 years, I will eat this column with salsa on top of it. I will do it. And Joe Kim Noah, I don't know if you guys follow the NBA, he's, like, destroying right now. Yeah. He's a double-double every night. He's blocking shots. He's a beast right now in the NBA. So there's a clip of him and Noah just talking about it, him eating the column with the salsa. It's really great.
Joe Kim Noah just clowning the guy, by the way.
Yeah,
like, standing up screaming hater. His personality hadn't changed at all.
Right. But, I mean, he was, at the same time, you know, he told the guy, he was like, I respect what you're doing.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's nice to see the media take responsibility. So I'm not going to eat any print Vernon Macklin's good. But, you know, I will, you know, down the road apologize for ripping Vernon Macklin if he's not good. So this is one of those things. Bobby always is like, I'm going to write down your crab. When you're wrong, I'm going to tell you. Write this one down. Vernon Macklin's horrible. If Vernon Macklin's not horrible, I'll take it all back and I'll call myself retarded.
At some point, we need to come up with a suitable punishment for this, a suitable offense to, you know, to fit the offense. I think we need to come up with something here that you need to do on this podcast eventually.
Okay,
we'll come back.
That's fine. We'll think about it. We'll mull it over.
You guys got 10 or so hours, 10 to 12 hours to think about this weekend while you're on the road.
As long as I'm not eating print, I'm okay with that.
Fortunately, that doesn't translate well to audio, so I'm not going to have you do that.
That'd be a neat little crunch.
All right, and we'll round the show out here with our Gator guarantees. We're going to predict something that's going to happen. I think we're all going with the South Carolina game this weekend. Let's start with Phil.
All right, I'm going to say that South Carolina will get no sacks in this game.
It's outrageous, Kyle.
All right, I'm going to go outrageous also, but not as outrageous as that. I'm going to say that, you know, I predicted 30 points for Florida. They got to get there somehow. We know it's not with offense. So there's going to be a special team score.
Wow.
I'm not saying how. It'll either be a return or a block punt or something, and a defensive score in this game.
Impressive.
Mm. Wow, you're going to really get closer in that count you made earlier
absolutely.
In the year about defensive touchdowns right. and defense or defensive and special team touchdowns of opponent's offense. I'm going to say Tebow accounts for 3 touchdowns in this game. I predicted they'll score 4. I'm going to say he accounts for 3, probably only throws 1, let's be honest here, and probably rushes for 2 down on the goal line. I'm going to say, and Jeff Demps is going to score the other one. That's not part of my guarantee, but just it's going
to
happen.
Right, just to let you guys know.
Yeah, no, it's fact. Like, it's already going to happen. Just take that into account. So that's it for this show. I think we're all very tired here. We're all very worn out from the ranting earlier in the show. Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Kyle, you got something?
I'm going to drop a challenge out there. All right. I know that our podcast is so wide-reaching.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to shoot for the stars here. I challenge somebody out there to get this podcast to Steve Adazio. Someone out there who's someone listening in the UAA office, somebody who knows somebody who could pass it along, somebody's friends with somebody on the team. I dare you to get this audio to Steve Adazio and have him email in a response.
Now, we'll be glad to have him on if he wants to come on the show.
Oh, well, that's the other
that
thing
would be amazing.
That I'll always say. This will never happen, and it shouldn't because it's lose-lose for Steve Adazio.
Yeah.
But if he ever wants to sit down and talk about this one-on-one with me, I'm more than happy to do that with him because then, you know, maybe he'll have to answer some questions since he's not a horde of reporters.
Yeah.
He won't be able to speak for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But if he ever wants to sit down and, you know, we can record the whole thing, we can videotape it, we can do whatever the heck he wants, I'm more than happy to. But this is like a third-party candidate challenging one of the two major party debate to a debate. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's lose-lose for him. If he you know, outwits me, it's like, okay, good job. You did in a student reporter. But if he loses, it's damning. And I mean, he would lose. There's no chance that Steve Adazio comes off good sitting in a room one-on-one for 20 minutes with me. But I'm going to throw it out there. Steve, you want it. You got it. Anywhere, any place, anytime. You want the home field advantage? I'll roll up into your office. We could do it there with your videotape people. Whatever you want to do, Steve.
All right, the challenge has been laid down. Go make it happen, listeners. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry.